Hey everyone, welcome to Blood Rituals. I'm Nicole Fernandez. Thank you so much for tuning in again. I haven't had any episodes out for a very long time, but I wanted to talk about something very important as of lately. Even though I'm on a short hiatus, I kind of need some sort of relief because I've been super stressed, super upset lately, but also I've been very enlightened, so I feel like I can share some information while also getting some things out in the open, off my chest, so that the universe can actually know how I feel about certain things. And the topic of discussion, more than anything, is communication. So, in regards to communication, even further, I want to talk about, can communication ever be true between two human beings? Sincerely, can that be a thing? My answer to that, I will tell you at the end, because there are a lot of answers to this that I've been thinking about, and I'm very split on this thing, because I don't know if I've talked about it on this podcast or not. I am very divided on many subjects, almost to the point where sometimes I think that it may have a slight case of, you know, just being a hypocrite in certain situations, more or less. So whenever it comes to communication, part of me is very logical and goes through it in a way that a writer would. Like, I kind of observe the way that the arguments are being told. I kind of observe the way that people talk to each other on like a casual sense, in a relational sense, like whenever they're actually in a relationship or in a friendship with a person. Basically, what I'm trying to say is sometimes I can incorporate every single factor into the equation, and I can understand that communication is happening, and sometimes it's all linguistic and about our body language, and even though we're not necessarily always getting the exact message across to another person, sometimes I believe that the other person does get the gist and it gets the job done. So communication is being done in that sense, in my mind. However, the other thing that I want to explore is nearly the complete opposite, because, you know, on one hand, I do believe that we can communicate properly and that we can get messages across and it's okay enough for us to actually talk. However, there have been so many instances lately where communication isn't proper and it's not even possible. And now I'm starting to realize that there are many factors that go into communication, not necessarily environmental factors, but also intellectual factors. So whenever it comes to the person that you're talking to, I'm starting to realize that communication is not necessarily based on your skills entirely, because that is only 50% of the equation. There are two people present always, so you're always only going to be 50% of the equation. And the other 50% is the audience. So your audience, you depend on them, basically. Your answer depends on your audience entirely, because if your message isn't clear to your audience, then you're basically making a message up for no reason whatsoever, and it makes you frustrated. The whole point of communicating is so that your audience understands you. Whether that be an actual audience, like 5 million people, or an audience like just one person. Even more than that, whenever you think about your audience, it seriously is a collection of things, right? So your audience always has a different age, a different set of beliefs. Usually they're stating their argument from several different standpoints, but what it comes down to is that a lot of our communication barriers come from us perceiving fallacies in another person's argument. And why I say perceiving fallacies is because nothing is actually a fallacy. Let me try to explain that a little bit. So, whenever you look at fallacies, they are defined as failure in reasoning. And even more than that, you can think of it as a piece of information. Sorry, my cat's playing with shit in the background. But basically just think of it as a step in someone's logic that the audience does not believe. And of course, I'm pretty sure somebody that's listening right now is probably thinking, okay, there are definitely objective rights and wrongs in the universe. So there have to be fallacies in the universe. There are definitely right and wrongs, but there are also facts. There's science. There are various arguments that can disprove many different fallacies. So why would I even think it's appropriate to think that fallacies don't exist? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because a misstep in logic can be perceived as, you know, for example, like slippery slope, that sort of fallacy. A slippery slope fallacy is essentially the argument that it's an argument that is based off of a series of related claims that are very exaggerated, that sort of sound like if we enact gun laws, then the next thing you know, we won't be allowed to defend ourselves against terrorists. And then when that happens, terrorists will attack us and take over an entire country. Sorry, I'm getting distracted because this cat is insane. Like, she keeps on jumping all over the place and just breaking shit. Anyway, if you hear that in the background, it's just because my cat's crazy. But anyway, this argument, back to the slippery slope argument. Basically, it's that whole train of logic where one thing happens that's based on a certain circumstance. It's not a generalization. It's a very specific certain circumstance. And based on that circumstance, we're making a generalization. And honestly, like, the slippery slope fallacy is a lot deeper than that, but that's the best way I could put it, I guess, briefly. Because whenever you have a slippery slope that works on your argument, or excuse me, that works on your audience, so all of us can think of an audience where that argument would work, where you could go up to a person and say, honestly, if we have gun control laws, the next thing you know, we won't be allowed to defend ourselves against terrorist attacks. And then you could keep going. If you see that working on your audience, they don't see it as a slippery slope. They see that as a reasonable series of related claims. And honestly, that's my whole point right there, is that one situation can be viewed two drastically different ways. And one of those ways people perceive as a fallacy, and it's just because the argument is not being validated by the audience itself. So if I don't believe that, enacting all these gun laws will make terrorists more prone to attack us and take over the country, I might, you know, attack that argument with the very assertion that it's a unqualified series of related claims, that I don't see the link between all of these things, and they're a little too specific to be generalized sort of thing. Obviously, this sort of communication is very textbook, but it just goes to show that a lot of us, if we just take ourselves out of the philosophical mindset for a second, a lot of us try to get a message across or try to argue something, and our audience doesn't believe us, but they don't outright state that it's a fallacy. And sure, sometimes things aren't fallacies. Like, sometimes your audience just disagrees with what you're saying, right? So there are arguments that are based in, like, ethos, logos, and pathos. So logos, obviously, logic. This is your sort of argument that relies on a major premise, a minor premise, and then a conclusion. And of course, there are different words for this. Those who study rhetoric will know that that's also an enthymeme. But that's for, you know, people that are super nerdy like me. However, if we're going back to the whole thing where it comes to just logos, your major premise is just a general thing that we accept, basically. So a really good example is that any organization that bears the responsibility for peace continues to be indispensable in regards to the government, right? a minor premise for this would be NATO bears the responsibility for peace. The conclusion would be NATO is indispensable. So that's pretty logical. It's everything is tied together almost like a sweater. It's tight-knit, it's very clear, and you know exactly where everything is connected. And there are different levels to this. We can argue logos by way of like deduction, induction, and also through way of enthymemes as well. And enthymemes are just very, very detailed versions of the major premise, minor premise, conclusion type format. However, whenever you think of an enthymeme, they're basically just like the emotional version of deductive arguments, since deductive arguments are tied to science for the most part. Like, for example, with deduction, the most famous argument would be the first premise being all people are mortal. It's general and it's accepted by everyone. The second thing is particular. Socrates is a person. It's focused. It's on one thing and that's it. And then the conclusion is basically tying everything together, saying, therefore, Socrates is mortal. So, number one, all people are mortal. Number two, Socrates is a person. Number three, therefore, Socrates is mortal. I think you guys get the picture whenever it comes to logos. But that is just one way that we communicate and argue our points, is by always having a clear line of logic and sets of premises behind our argument. So whenever you think of the arguments that you're forming in your head, you don't necessarily always think about the moral standpoint that you're in when you're making those decisions. Most of the time, you're making an argument and you're just spitting it out instead of really observing what foundational principles you're fighting for. So here's an excellent example. So I had to do an experiment for my rhetoric class where I had to figure out how to use pathos and commonplaces at the same time, which I will get into. So pathos is a fancy word for pathetic in Greek, basically, and it just means the appeal to emotion. So all of your pathos arguments are coming from an emotional standpoint. And we're not necessarily talking about pathos just yet, but I did want to talk about the general claims that we kind of stand on and our foundations that we stand on, because those are called commonplaces whenever it comes to rhetoric. And, you know, there are also common topics and whatnot. They are not that different from commonplaces, but I'm just going to give you a quick example with this experiment regarding me trying to figure out if I can get my boyfriend to watch Harry Potter with me. So basically my purpose was to try and convince Hunter to watch the entire Harry Potter series with me. And it was a challenge because he's seen the entire series with several people in the past, and he hasn't picked it up since 6 years ago. He read every single book, and he just hates it. But I really wanted to try and see if I could, you know, move him with my pathos or my commonplace. So basically, I really wanted to figure out if I could use the commonplace of happy wife, happy life, or relationships require compromise to kind of influence him to talk with me about all of this. And whenever I say the commonplace, happy wife, happy life, or relationships require sacrifice, think about how common that saying is and how easy it is for people to accept it. You can think of commonplaces as another way of saying like common sense. It's something that's shared amongst every member of the community. That's why people call these ideologies, because we just accept it most of the time. And it's not everything that we just accept, right? It's just major, major ideas. And it belongs to the group that adheres to that idea, right? So whenever it comes to religion, for example, like, a lot of people adhere to being Christian or Muslim or Jewish. However, just because they adhere to those ideologies, it doesn't mean that somebody from the outside can come in and argue against them necessarily, because they have a strong enough commonplace to back them up, which is the entire religion that they stand on, there are a bunch of people that actually believe in the truth of whatever they're talking about, so they're able to stand on that platform to argue on. So another good example is Blue Lives Matter. I don't support it, by the way. I do not support it, but there are enough people out there that believe in that sort of thing that they've created a common place to fight off of because they have a collection of ideologies that kind of back their, that kind of back their argument and make them feel valid in some sort of way. And they are valid arguments. They are valid arguments. It's just that we find them fallacious because we don't accept the steps in their logic. Like with Blue Lives Matter, I do not accept the steps in their logic whatsoever. However, they have a big enough audience that does, so it doesn't matter if I adhere to it or not. It is still a commonplace, whether I like it or not. It exists. Just like happy wife, happy life. Having compromise in a relationship. That is a compromise, or excuse me, that is a commonplace, because way back when, of course, this originated from decades and decades ago. However, it wasn't necessarily something that we all accepted all the time, right? Because at one point, it didn't really matter if the women were happy. It really didn't matter whatsoever if the wife was happy, as long as the house was taken care of, the kids were taken care of, and the husband had a job sort of thing. The family line was being carried on and the farms were taken care of. You know, there was a bunch of stuff going on all over the world, but I'm just using a vague example to kind of paint a picture as to how these things transition over time based on its relevance. Because without it being relevant in a culture, it can't be a commonplace unless enough people accept it. And then again, it kind of goes hand in hand, right? A lot of people won't accept an idea unless it is appropriate for that time. And if it's not appropriate, it is still valid if a large group of people adhere to it. Here's another example. Flat earthers. Flat earthers have a big enough fan base, I guess you could say, to where they can go ahead and argue off their platform, argue off their commonplaces that have been around since forever, since before Galileo. You know, they can go ahead and argue off of those platforms. And of course, the commonplace that the earth is round is much more popular and much more accepted than the flat earth theory. But the flat earth theory is still in existence. Okay, so basically, tying this all back to the issue of communication, I just want to talk about why I get so frustrated with this sort of thing. Because yes, as a human being that is sort of like pretty logical, I can understand the fact that there are different arguments based on different things. Like, we only expanded on logos because I really wanted to get into the issue of communication more than anything, not arguing. But logos, pathos, like I said, appeal to emotion, and ethos, the ethical sort of questions that we ask ourselves and the ethical arguments that we make, as well as just our ethical standpoint in life, all relate back to our issues with communication. And not only that, a lot of us don't know how to respectfully point out when somebody has a fallacy in our mind, you know, because that's the sort of thing that really trips me up more than anything, is that I recognize that there are different things going on in different people's lives, and that everyone is a human, and that they're in different phases in their life, and that they have different thoughts than I do, and that they process them differently than I do. However, it gets really frustrating that I'm the only party most of the time that's doing that sort of thing. And of course, a lot of my friends listen to this and my family. I don't want you guys to think I'm talking about you, because I'm not. Like, I have plenty of people in my life that do push themselves to that degree of actually wanting to understand the other person's point of view instead of not listening whatsoever. Sorry, not necessarily not listening, but more or less just trying to prove that my point is a fallacy and make sure that theirs is valid. When I am validating their argument the entire time, it's just that I don't agree with it, sort of thing. And that's the thing. Why can't we disagree on things anymore? That's something that frustrates me really bad. Because disagreeing on topics in any sort of sense, in any century, has always proved to be beneficial whenever it comes to just discussing ideas, you know? Whenever you're talking about verbal abuse, that's a different story. However, if you're discussing different ideas and different concepts and perceptions on an idea that, or excuse me, on a topic that's being presented, that's an opportunity for every party to learn about something, right? So that's where I get really confused about people and where they're coming from when it comes to communication, because most of the time people have different motives when it comes to communicating. You know, are they just trying to tell me something? Do they need to be heard? Are they having a bad day and they just need to vent? Is this person even listening? Do they have something else going on in their life that's kind of clouding them? Like, there are a lot of different factors that kind of go into that, and it's not necessarily easy to wade through those waters all the time. Motivations vary from person to person, and sometimes whenever it comes to communicating, the person has a motive and you have no idea what the fuck it is. Whenever you read through literature, like, obviously art does not define reality, but art suggests what happens in reality, right? And it just helps you think about certain scenarios that might play out in real life. And I'm reading The Maze at Windermere, and one of the stories is about a general who's writing in his diary like it's a confessional, okay? But every single time he communicates with people, it is so deceitful, and he writes his secret motives, and the entire time that he's talking to himself in his journal, he makes clear that he is trying very hard to seduce a 15-year-old girl and just leave. He doesn't care about her. He's thinking about forcing it from her, all of these things. But in the meantime, while communicating with her, sending her love letters, meeting in private, trying to talk other people that are seeing the situation out of telling the father, all of this stuff, he seems like a neutral character in actuality. But then you see his diary and he's completely sadistic. So all of us have met people like that where they're communicating with us and we're not sure why this conversation is happening until they prove what their motive actually was. So, you know, I'm not saying that I'm sitting here arguing with a bunch of people all the time, but I will say that I've gotten to a lot of arguments lately, and a lot of these arguments seem to be based in the other person's unwillingness to accept their own emotions for the most part. And that's what really frustrates me. You know, there's so many things that really frustrate me, but that's a question that I have for all of you guys. Is it hard for you guys to actually accept the truth inside of yourself? Because for me, it's almost like I have to in order to understand reality. Like, I can't lie to myself because I've spent a large portion of my life already lying to myself that I kind of messed my belief system up. Like I told you before, I'm kind of split half and half. And sure, like, I feel like, you know, sometimes I feel a little schizophrenic, a little multiple personality, because I'm so divided on two different things. Like, I feel very hedonistic most of the time, but then I'm also very strict and moralistic and upright. So, and then sometimes I fall in the middle. It's very frustrating. However, outside of that issue with myself, I just wanted to state that because I wouldn't have come to so many conclusions about life or about anything else without that sort of acceptance within myself, you know? And even further, I feel like most of my arguments don't go as far as they could because I'm willing to accept when I'm wrong, you know? That's the other thing, is like I'm willing to take on blame that other people aren't in that time period, because I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I'm just saying that it's become a habit because no one else seems to pick up blame whenever it comes to them doing something wrong recently. And it's just really upsetting because, of course, maybe my argument is being seen as fallacious over and over again. However, I just don't see why. I don't see how or why most of my arguments can be so fallacious when they're based in commonplaces such as people deserve respect. You know, that's mainly most, that's like the foundation of most of my arguments, is that people deserve respect, that communication is key, stuff like that. Words over fists, stuff like that. You know? So, this was kind of a rant, but it's kind of important for us to reflect on. Like, is communication true between human beings, even though there are all these crazy, flimsy little things that we have to deal with that aren't necessarily concrete all the time? Or is communication achievable by pushing through this sort of, what is it called? I guess you could call it a barrier with people, like pushing through this barrier and finding the correct premise, or not necessarily the correct premise, but the best premise that your audience will connect with. Like, is it an issue with communication, or do you think that the issue lies with dedication towards that person? That's a huge thing that I keep wondering as well, because sometimes you're in the middle of an argument and you feel like this just isn't worth it. But then again, you look back on your best friendships, your relationships with your family, stuff like that, and you like pushed through those barriers over and over and over again until you got to a place of peace because you love them so much. At least that's the point in, or excuse me, at least that's the case in my life. I can't assume that for everyone else, because then I'd be making a commonplace that can obviously be disputed. But enough dumb jokes about commonplaces. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's safe to wonder how loyal or dedicated you are to the person that you're talking to or trying to communicate to or communicate with. And that's the other thing. Like, are you honest with yourself to a degree where you can actually accept whether or not you're frustrated, so that you can alleviate the situation somehow? Like, that's where other sorts of communication comes in. Communication with yourself. That's an even deeper topic that I'd like to get into, is that how important is it to communicate with yourself? You know, reading through The Maze at Windermere, the main character having a quote from one of my classmates, the self-awareness of a stick, can't seem to understand anything whatsoever. And he doesn't understand exactly why he's in his place in life, why he has these sort of things happening to him. He lacks the killer instinct in life, so he hasn't necessarily progressed in anything career-wise. He's just floating, and he's at this hotel dating multiple people behind their backs, and they're all friends, stuff like that. And the other characters have high self-awareness, and those people are not necessarily manipulative to a point where they're destructing society, besides the major who plans to forcefully take, I haven't finished the book yet, but he's all thinking about forcefully having sex with this 15-year-old Jewish girl. Anyway, all these people have a different degree of self-awareness, and it affects their life tremendously, at least in the novel. So it makes me question if that's how it is in real life. If we go through life on different levels, floating through different levels of self-awareness, and whenever we're doing that, bouncing back and forth from being either completely self-aware, not self-aware at all, if that clouds our perception of certain things, because, you know, if you don't understand that you're getting offended and your argument in your head is some sort of rebuttal against the other person's statement, like, it's easy for you to think that, okay, their argument is fallacious, when in actuality, if you don't have enough self-awareness, you might actually just be getting offended. I know this is a weird explanation, but let me just put it into context. Here, a commonplace is happy wife, happy life, right? Well, me trying to convince Hunter to watch all the Harry Potters didn't work out so well, because that was my whole entire argument, that if we wanted to make this relationship work, we kind of had to have compromise. We have to have compromise. So if he gives by watching this movie, then it'll help a lot, because that's what I really want at this time. And maybe we could work something out outside of that. However, in his head, he was counteracting that by basically saying that I'm like forcing him to do this, right? And that's true. I was trying very hard to persuade him, and he felt the power of persuasion up to a point where he started getting a little upset and started wondering why I was pushing to make him do something that he didn't want to do. And that's when I said something along the lines of, that I would do the same thing for him, something like that. And, you know, obviously that sort of response for most people will elicit an offensive reaction. Like, most people will want to protect themselves when they're getting attacked verbally or physically. It doesn't really matter. And whenever you're protecting yourself, you aren't necessarily clear or conscious about your rebuttals in that moment. You're sort of just spitting things out because you need to defend yourself so that you feel like you're somewhat valid. Like, you do have thoughts, but sometimes you can't articulate yourself properly. But that's the thing. If you can't articulate yourself properly, does that say something about your level of self-awareness? I think it does. It's really difficult for me to even talk about this, but there are so many different things that go into communication that I've started to realize stem from many different areas in our life, like external things, internal things, philosophical things that are obviously somewhere in the middle of external and internal, right? Because they're very common, but it's also sort of extraneous from us. But anyway, that's all the time I have for today. And I know that this was a short rant about communication, but like I've mentioned on my podcast before, communication helps people develop in their early years. And the more we communicate, the more we grow as people, but that influences our thought pattern and our opinions and the way that we view other people and ourselves. So if you find yourself constantly thinking that there needs to be one way of acting or one way of thinking, or you're constantly upset or getting frustrated about the people around you not following the rules, quote unquote, or not necessarily acting correctly, try to take a step back and think about the fact that, yes, there are universal tenets that the majority of the world follows, or the majority of our community follows, that, like, some moral guidelines that we all adhere to for the sake of creating peace in our community. But just because a large number of people subscribe to universal morality, that doesn't mean every single person does. And also, the degree to which somebody subscribes to morality varies by person and by situation, depending on what the person's circumstances are in that situation. So, really, as you guys are coming together over the next couple weeks with your friends, or going to work, or just being around your children, or out in the grocery stores, in the world, try your best to test the theory that I tried asking at the beginning of this podcast, which is communication something that we can physically do? Like, is communicating possible, or is it impossible due to our perceptions being so drastically different? Part of me believes that, you know, it's impossible, but the hopeful part of me, the logical part of me, not the pathos part of me, truly believes that communication can be done as long as there is enough effort and dedication towards getting a message across to a person a certain way. And even though the other person is 50% of the equation, as long as the person trying to communicate does their part to try their best to communicate their idea and understand the other person's idea, so not trying to persuade the person of your own, but listening, understanding their perception, and relating your own in a healthy manner, communication should be doable. But if not, my theory is that we kind of need to create motivation in ourselves to communicate with people properly. And if somebody else is not accepting our message or is not communicating with us properly or trying to listen properly, then we also have to do our part to understand that that's part of nature and that's part of life. Like, we don't necessarily deserve to be communicated with, right? Like, there are things that people deserve in life, but being communicated with in a proper manner is not guaranteed. It's just something that we want and prefer in life. So with that, I'm going to go. I hope that everybody has a great week, a great Halloween. I hope everyone is going to see some of the movies that are out in the theaters, because I've already seen Psycho, Beetlejuice, and The Shining, and I'm about to go see The Exorcist later on this month too. So that's all I got for you guys. I hope you have a wonderful day. And remember, Wendy, darling, light of my life, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your brains in. I'm just going to bash them right the fuck in.